Good afternoon. It is 1:06 on July 24, 2018. This is a work session regarding a proposed settlement in case number PU-17-295, which is a natural gas rate increase for Montana Dakota Utilities Company. I'm Randy Christman, Chairman of the Commission, and joined by Commissioners Brian Krasius and Julie Fedorchak. I don't have, as well as Patrick Fawn, our advisory staff person at the table. I don't. Also in the room is Victor Shook from advocacy staff and Tammy Aberly from the company, but I don't have any opening comments. Commissioner Fedorchak, do you?
Not really, other than to say I'm glad we were able to pull together a work session fairly quickly on this one and to discuss the settlement agreement. I appreciate the parties having worked through a lot of issues and proposing a path forward here through this settlement, and I think it addresses a lot of issues, and I have questions on some as well, so look forward to our discussion.
Okay, I'll turn it over to you, Commissioner Krasius, as portfolio holder, to start the discussion.
I should say some of the parties, not all of the parties, are in on this.
Right.
I want to make clear that. I know that.
Okay. Well, I was trying to break it down, and the I think tabling the SSIP for now, and then coming back to that later in the work session after we get through the conversation on the revenue agreement stated in the, I'm trying to find that note that I had broken the charges down by. Well, anyway, it's you have to move forward without it. But so that, and then the other, so the two questions I had, one is the revenue amount, is that the correct amount, and get a feel for that, and then the other part was an AARP, ARP, states it in their testimony, their post-hearing brief, I should say, they have a concern with cost of service, actual cost of service as they see it, and then that the amount, the existing amount that customers are being charged, the 1960, exceeds that, and then the proposed increase of $1.27 would exceed that by an even greater amount. So I think that's a fair question to go over, but I think as a general rule, when I went through the revenue, it wasn't so much an issue with the revenue amount, but I think the history of the commission has been to slowly move away from volumetric charges or to not rely on that as much. Is that correct, Pat?
The commission has been moving more into the base charge for customers in the past cases, but we've moved in stages too, and not necessarily all at once.
Tied though to the acceptable level, like the demonstrated level of this is the basic cost to serve.
Tied to the cost of service studies.
Right.
Correct.
It wasn't just
not
a
just
preference,
like every time there's a new charge, it goes into the basic service charge. It has to tie to here's what has demonstrated as this is the basic, like, cost to serve, and then anything beyond that would be a different rate mechanism, not the basic service charge.
To my knowledge, we've never exceeded in a basic service charge what the company's cost of service studies have shown to be the customer cost.
Okay.
Never exceeded in terms of the base rate has never...
The base rate has never exceeded the amount that the company's cost of service studies show is the customer-related cost.
Well, is 1813 the right number, though, on current cost of service?
You're wondering what MDU's cost of service study showed for the cost? Is that what you're wondering?
Right, right. Is the 1813... I assume
that's
that
what
is.
AARP quotes in there.
Yeah, is that the correct number? Does that match up?
Oh, I haven't checked, double-checked it, but I guess we can go with that for now.
I'm assuming it does.
Well, that's jumped out at me big time, too. And I don't know if it's because it's coming from different... I don't know why. I don't know why. That seems like it would have been something that I would have remembered from the hearing and dug into more, both this time and the previous time as well. So it's on page, did you find it, Pat? It's on the second to the last page. This brief isn't numbered, but...
No.
Third to the last page.
Yeah, third to the last, but at the end, it's second paragraph.
I see it there.
So we should, since that's a question that I had too.
You want me to confirm that number?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's so many different ways that this stuff has been discussed and analyzed and brought forward that I'm not sure where that number comes from.
It would be. It'll be in the application, so that's where I'll be looking.
Don't you think that would have been a major discussion point during the hearings, and that advocacy staff would have torn into that as well?
I think
if we're already exceeding the cost of service,
I would think they would have torn into that. Yes.
Yeah. So something. Is different about that number than what we've been assuming or believed to be in the past. So I think we need to get to the bottom of that.
So you're making a note of that, and they're going to follow up and explain that, right, Pat?
I will. I'll have Jerry do it. He's the lead.
He's good at that stuff.
He's the lead advisor on this case.
All right, here's another thing, and if I had my sheet, so bear with me, it'll be a little rough how I explain this, but they're clunky. So the original application was to increase revenue by $5.868 million. We granted an interim of $4.6 million. Then after the TCJA, the revenue increase was reduced to $3.575 million, so it's been coming down, but you know, 2.3 of that was off of the original was due to the TCJA. But working backwards on this and getting down to the final $2.5 million that the settlement states as an agreed upon amount, and again, as Julie smartly states, not by everybody, but on the $2.5 million represented in this, when I do the math on the, it's about $1 million-ish, you know, right around, a little more than $1 million apart from what the number is after the TCJA, which means the original revenue increase request of 5.868 million dropped to 4.8, but it's still a pretty high percentage of what was asked for.
Well, you have to take off the TCJA to make that kind of a comparison, don't you? Because you're just taking out the taxes, so which they've taken out.
Yeah.
I mean, that... It's 2.5 compared to 3.5.
But it'd be still only a little... I mean, in terms of what was given up... It was just slightly over 1 million.
Right.
Either way.
Yeah. 2.5 to 3.5.
But the original, you know, that's pretty good. You know, getting the bulk of the original request, whether it comes through the relief from the TCJA or from the final proposed number in the settlement of 2.5 million. It just jumped out on me because it's not consistent with what I've seen previously in terms of where it starts and where it ends. And that's there's no rationale behind that other than it's an observation that I found curious. And each case is different, so you really can't compare them, but there's a lot of consistency in how the numbers move over the course of time. This is not consistent with the historical trend.
What do you think is a more, like what?
Seems like they wind up in that 50% to 60% of the original ask, maybe 65, but usually around that 60% to 65% range. Well, this is really more, you know, closer to 80%.
In which cases are you, how, like, what are you basing that on, Brian, in terms of which cases and, like, how long of a trend?
Well, can I state those? State one example?
Sure, it's a past case, yeah. Decided case.
Okay. Yeah. Going back to the MDU electric case, and I don't have it in front of me, but I think the original ask was 13.4 and it landed at 7.5, if I remember right. And of course, there was that 1.5 to 2 million in accelerated retirement costs or charges. So that, you know, again, they're all different. I realize that, and not to dwell on it. It's just
well, then more than anything, what we have to focus on is what's just and reasonable,
right.
And getting to that point. It isn't a percentage of, you know, there's no really. Formula for a percent of the original ask that we can apply to in any way that's defendable.
Yeah, I think too one could just as easily argue that the company was much more cautious in what they asked for this time because last time in that particular case, I didn't remember those numbers, but as you cited it, they barely got over half of what they asked for. Maybe they were just more cautious about what they asked for this time.
Mm-hmm. Which is what we want.
Yeah.
Sure. Yep.
No. But, I mean, I'm not looking to see... I don't think we grade ourselves on how much we can nick them. It's on finding that just and reasonable rate. But getting back to the point that it does seem
I hope that hasn't been the intent of commissions, you know, previous to nick the companies. I certainly wouldn't advocate for that.
I wonder, I thought it was curious that the federal agencies believe that the company's claimed revenue deficiency is overstated by $1.1 million, and that's just about exactly what the decrease was. So, and they were one of the parties that agreed. So that seemed to provide some possible landing point for where they got to that number.
I think where I'm at overall is on the cost of service study, checking that number as discussed. Because a lot for me hinges on that. The fact that the parties are in agreement by and large with the revenue, the settlement amount, including advocacy, here at the commission, that goes a long way for me. But it's, to me, the biggest thing is, okay, if they're over, truly over on the cost of service, then does that flow back into volumetric charges instead to meet that revenue requirement? Or a different... Same, going after the same revenue number, moving toward the same revenue number, the 2.5, but how is it charged out to customers? That makes sense.
Sure. I mean, if the increase, there are a bunch of decisions there, but if everything is held equal, like the percent increase to every customer class is held equal, if you were to approve less of a customer-related charge for the residential class, then the difference, in order to keep the amount of increase to that residential class the same, the difference would have to come up, would have to be through the volumetric charges.
So for general, and then the larger usage residential customers would pick up more, and the small, low-usage households would pick up less of the increase, which is, in effect, right, volumetric principle.
Yes.
Well, outside of my curiosity comment, being just curious, you know, based on historical trends, which I agree isn't relevant, just noting that, I found it curious.
It's interesting, though.
Those are the two. I mean, that's where I landed on, or wound up on this, outside of what to do with the SSIP, and I've got some thoughts on that, but...
I have a different question before we'd move to that, if you're done with it.
Yeah, yeah.
So...
Are you done with the settlement?
No.
Oh, okay.
So besides that AARP number on the cost of service study, it seems to me like we had something more defined, like that you could figure out a tenth of a percent or something on ROE, what that equaled in revenue requirement. So now that the settlement has the number... The 9.4, how much does that, just that one item, is there at least a ballpark number that going from 10% to 9.4% reduces the revenue requirement? If so, what is that?
I don't have that memorized. I mean, I don't have that at the tip of my tongue, but what that is, you can calculate that. That is possible. And I can get that back to you, too.
And so is it a fair way to evaluate this? If that were... Let me find a different number here first so I can ask my question better. If the... And just to make an easy example, if the difference in revenue requirement between 10% and 9.4% was $1.1 million, then it would be fair to say that all the other things that were disputed are being authorized in this settlement. Like the incentive program, the housing losses, the industry dues and advertising. Those are pretty undefined, and I get that that's how the settlement process works, but I'm trying to just figure out backwards after the big, I think, pretty significant difference in the ROE number. It seems like you can pretty, if we knew that number, what the difference in revenue requirement is between 9.4 and 10, mm-hmm. It would tell us if most of this other stuff is being accepted or if a significant amount of it is being rejected.
Sure.
Yeah. Was the ROE 1.1, the difference $1.1 million, so that alone accounts for the change of revenue and all this other stuff the company gets, basically, is what you're...
Because some of those things, you know, some of the advertising, for example, but some of the others too, I don't know if 60% on the incentive program was the right number or not, but I do think that advocacy staff brought some concerns that had a lot of merit, and that some of those things probably ought not be reduced. And so depending on how much of this revenue requirement is chewed up by that 6/10 difference in ROE, that might influence my position on this.
Okay.
I would be interested in addition to that, and some of this stuff is just, I know it's readily available, I just didn't have a chance yet to dig it up.
That was the negative part of going quickly,
but yeah.
It was good to get on this.
Yeah. If you added to that as another line item, the cost of the SSIP plan for 2018, what those costs are, I'd be interested in knowing those, if that was in the record specifically.
It is in the record.
I thought there was an amount for that. Wasn't like $5.5 million or something like that for 2018? Not maybe revenue requirement, but the cost. You know, that said, I did note that on the ROE that the company pretty much went with what, well, it was significantly closer to what staff wanted than what they were requesting.
And the ROE, did you say?
Yeah. Staff had settled on 9.23, and MDU had wanted 10, and it's at 9.4. So in the, you know, recognizing it's give and take. So wherever the revenue comes from, it's still a final number that kind of, I think, the parties probably look at, because that's final number that the company's getting, regardless of whether it's for the incentive pay or the plane or the what's one? You know, how long the employee housing issue, you know, that all were big ticket items. The other areas where the staff got its recommendation, the excess deferred taxes being that non-plant related edit amortized over 3, the company had wanted 10, so that is the staff recommendation was followed there. Compliance tariffs, the staff, the NSF charge, that's not a huge issue, but. So, I don't know, overall I thought it was a pretty positive settlement. I do have the same concern as Brian's expressed on the basic service charge with that information that jumped out in the AARP brief. We need to get to the bottom of that. But there weren't any other big questions that I had on the settlement or concerns.
But you're going to get me some information on that ROE comparison to revenue requirement?
Yes.
I think we were still, or sorry, Randy, if I'm repeating what you just said, I'm trying to find the number on what was spent already this past year in the SSIP.
We can find that off the line.
We'll track that down. I think it's a good question. But no, I
do have a note here, $800,000 of, and maybe I made a mistake on my note too, but $800,000 of the $5.7 million for 2018 is for plastic. The rest, almost $5 million, is for steel. So if I got that right during the hearing, it would be 5.7.
That is expended, or that's the SSIP going forward?
For 2018.
That was the 2018, but that doesn't translate to a revenue requirement, though.
No. And I don't have a note on that.
Yeah, I don't either. Do you have any other questions on the settlement, Randy?
No, I think most of the things are either clearly spelled out or part of the vagaries of a settlement agreement.
Right. You know.
That makes it. You know, there is an element that element is challenging.
Yeah.
You know, but you have to trust as well, which I do, and that give and take that happens when you're in a negotiation that we're not privy to.
Okay.
Hire the right people, right?
The things that I'm hearing that we need are clarification on that $18.13 on the cost of service study is indicated by AARP. The revenue requirement impact on the reduction in ROE from 10% to 9.4%, and the revenue requirement of the 2018 SSIP investment. Is that properly phrasing what you asked for?
Yeah, yep.
Okay, my only other questions would have to do with SSIP, if you're ready to move into that.
I am. So on the SSIP, just from a timing standpoint, had a regulatory conference. Was that last week? It was last week. And I think just about every, there was a commissioner only meeting, and I think just about every commissioner was scribbling a note on this. But one of the speakers, if I'm in thinking of the right meeting, but just going through talking about aging infrastructure and utility companies having a handle on what they have in the ground for infrastructure when it comes to pipe in the ground, metal pipe, plastic, whatever, how old it is, noting that there are some challenges when you take over a system, but at the same time, that was the one thing during the hearing that kept jumping back at me. And is there enough to justify implementing this program while absolutely stressing the need to have a safe system out there? But if something's still good for another 30 years or longer, why are we replacing it now? Unless there's going to be such a logjam and such a burden placed on a future generation of ratepayers, or the future generation of ratepayers, that all of a sudden it's a lot to try and push through in a short period of time in terms of overall cost. But I need to see more in terms of how old is the infrastructure, what's an overall comprehensive, the overall comprehensive plan to replace that infrastructure based on age, type of pipe in the ground, the testing of components that have been replaced in these systems. Minot came up. I think, well, that system's been, boy, I could get this wrong, but I thought that system's been owned since the 70s. Or acquired sometime in the 70s, but I could be wrong, but it's been quite a while. It's been a long time. And wouldn't you be taking those parts, those valves, lengths of pipe, wouldn't you be testing them? You know, if you were really concerned about their safety, and boy, we've got to replace them. And very well could. I'm not an expert on that. But there was nothing tangible in hand in terms of here's the type of pipe, here's the average life of that pipe. Here's, you know, a current set of tests that have been run off, parts that have been replaced, the old parts, periodically testing those. So is the SSIP not to jump in with full replacement now, but rather going into a testing program, starting to harvest the parts that are being replaced, and just having some data and something to go off of? Because on one hand, I don't want the system to be unsafe, but I don't want to be saying yes to replacing a system that's still our pipe in the ground, or, and maybe it's not the pipe, maybe it's the components. Maybe that's you know, in all likelihood, the higher risk piece of the puzzle here. But anyway, that jumped out at me at the hearing, and it really jumped out at me at the meeting last week when it was brought up. And so I don't think this is unique to North Dakota. I think this is something, question mark across the country, but of course the only thing I'm worried about is North Dakota. So I'd like to see something more definitive before I could get behind a dollar amount.
Well, I had segregated the SSIP off, and I'm not prepared to talk about that because I think that they did it in the, they separated in the settlement agreement. I kind of view that as separate, so I'm not prepared to offer any conclusions on that piece yet, or a rejection, which basically it's, if I'm understanding you right, Brian, you would reject it, what they're proposing. But I will say this, that pipe in the ground, that gas infrastructure, is some of the most important and potentially dangerous to the public of anything in our communities. And it goes up to every single house in our large towns and in the towns that these guys serve. And so before I dismiss what they're proposing as plan for a long-term effort to assure its safety. I want to have a much better understanding of the grounds for erecting it than I do now. So,
no, I think
I need to. That's to say, I'm going back through everything on the record on this issue before I make a decision on it from both sides.
So, kind of between there.
I'll follow up. I don't know if there's that big of a gap, if there's really any gap.
Well, so just a thought then, or a question. If the settlement is approved, then what's the next step as far as SSIP? If the settlement is approved and that's not addressed, do we return whatever is left of the filing fee and have no money for working on SSIP anymore? Or is that still something that kind of demands an answer one way or the other as part of the rate case?
I think I'm going to answer your question, but MDU filed SSIP as part of their application, and so we're processing the application, and the decision, the commission would, in an order, I believe, make a decision about the SSIP one way or the other, or
at the same time as we would approve or disapprove of the settlement.
Or, I mean, the other option is you're processing the application and the decision in the statement in the order could be, we need more information. We're not dismissing this. We're not denying this. We need more information. I think that's a possibility.
And that would continue on then as part of the rate case, so we would continue to have filing fee for it.
Or we could say, or the commission could say, yeah, you could say it continues on. In this case, in this proceeding, or the company should bring a different proceeding, a second proceeding, for SSIP, or bring it in the next rate case. It would be up to the company when they want to bring that, I think.
So, are you saying we would open up the record for more information because the record on this case was closed?
It is closed. No, I'm not saying we should have more information. We could defer this issue to a different proceeding, or we could say, you know, without prejudice, and yeah. They could come back with this, with a proposal. It could be exactly the same. It could be something different. And they would decide when to bring it back.
Or we could say, here's what we approve. I mean, we could, you know, based on the record, say, you know, these sorts of things are required, or, you know, under these conditions.
Sure.
The settlement, I guess I was under the assumption that the settlement and that decision don't have to be at the same time. We can make a decision on the settlement, and we can then make a decision on, because the settlement is kind of self-contained, and it specifies that this has not been addressed, and then we continue moving forward on the SSIP issue. But maybe I'm wrong in that.
Well,
that was sort of my hope.
Yeah.
That a settlement doesn't necessarily close the case.
Well,
it doesn't,
because the settlement says in here that is not addressed and has to be still addressed by the commission. So
I don't know if we want to do another thing like we're doing with Northern States Power right now, but you know, that's kind of a continuation. That was continued from a...
This might be a legal question for Alana to...
Yeah, I have other legal questions related to this, because not all parties were... I mean, this settlement came in after the hearing, so do we have to do something, some kind of notice about...
Oh, I bet we do.
...after acquired information that commission might want to consider? There's a party that wasn't wasn't a signatory on the mm-hmm. settlement. So they should have a chance, I guess, to cross-examine. I mean, this is where legal comes in. But I think that's a possibility that they would have a right mm-hmm. to cross-examine, or they could give up the right somehow in the form of a response to a request or, you know, or some kind of letter to the party saying, how do you want to proceed with this?
Well, and they probably could file a brief on the settlement.
There's all kinds of, I think there's several possibilities here, but I think we have to do something else before, I think the commission has to do something else before they can actually vote on the settlement.
Okay.
With regarding how the SSIP is kept alive as a part
of
the settlement?
Well, that's a different, different issue. Just procedural issue on how we go forward with the settlement itself.
And even just the settlement, we would need more.
I think so, yes.
Is Jack allowed to offer just procedural insights?
I believe he would be, yes.
Maybe we should ask him.
Should we have him come in?
If he's able to, I think it would be helpful. Don't you guys?
I would, yeah, yes.
I would too, but...
I would suspect he's on his way.
Might be.
If he's listening in. Which he typically is on these. No, my position on this is still the same. I'd like to make a decision based on data and not just an abundance of caution. Because where do you draw the line on that abundance of caution? It's like a set of tires. If they still have half of their life left, you can easily argue that out of an abundance of caution, new tires are safer than tires that are halfway through their life expectancy. But do you replace them? And how do you balance that cost and justify it if they're still safe to be used? So, and I don't think this will take that long. We're talking, you know, in terms of the SSIP, this is a long-term replacement program. This isn't just, hey, it's got to be done in the next 24 months. This is ongoing, and frankly, once you get through all of the old infrastructure, you can be sure that you have to circle back on top of.
The question is, and I think, you know, what to do with the settlement. If the commissioners want to consider the settlement agreement, it came in after the hearing, what's necessary in order for them to consider it? And I know that they can issue an order you could see that the settlement came in, but they could just make a decision based on the record without any further procedural requirements, because we had the hearing, and you'd base it on that, the evidence and the record there. But what can they do then regarding the settlement and procedurally? They have to do something.
And we're not trying to persuade you to answer questions that you shouldn't answer. If these are things that as advocacy staff you shouldn't be addressing, then just say that we weren't sure whether you could.
I think with the splitting of staff, I think that would prevent me from probably giving my take on the procedural mechanisms that we can go forward with.
All right.
We don't want to cause a bad situation.
Yeah, I guess that's probably better.
So we would check in with Alana on that.
Okay. When did she get back? Is she gone all week?
I didn't know she was gone. So.
I believe she's gone all week. She sent out an email on it. I just don't remember exactly what it said.
All week.
It might have just gone to us.
I imagine it did.
Yeah.
I know she told us. I'm just not sure. I think it's all week.
Okay. So... Well, we kind of know where everybody is on the settlement anyway, so we just need to procedurally get some direction. We need to get some of the information on the class cost of service study answered. Mm-hmm. We'll need another work session regardless. So.
And the things that we asked you about, Pat, are things you should be able to gather relatively quickly, I think, right?
Should be. Yes.
So we could probably do another work session next week.
I'm gone all week.
I meant the week after next week.
wait.
Or if it's really quick, Friday, then this week.
I'll be up at 8-1 one day at the fair on Friday.
Somewhere or other, I'm out
of speaking of pipeline safety.
Trying to make sure this old pipeline doesn't get wrecked. Okay, I think we're about wrapped up then, aren't we?
Sure.
I think a pretty good laundry list of information for staff
we don't,
to figure out for us.
If we don't have a work session before August 1st, we could schedule one on August 1st at the meeting.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, well, we won't have one before, it doesn't sound like, because we're not going to do one yet this week. And I'm not going to do a work session like this by phone. So it would be, if we want to do it now, do you have your stuff to say?
I didn't bring my stuff.
So let's add that to
scheduling. I mean, you can kind of schedule something with us.
Yeah.
To, the company's here. It's not like they're in Fergus Falls or something.
And then I would be happy to be prepared to provide more thoughts on the SSIP component then, if we want to, or if we want to just plow ahead with the settlement separately, we can.
How about if in this afternoon, since we're going to be wrapping this up quite a bit earlier than we thought, we would each talk to Pat with our schedules for that week, not next week, but the following week, whatever those dates are, with what days were available or what half days were available, and maybe we can just get something and we can schedule it without waiting till the next meeting, and then we all know our calendars better. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Sounds good.
Anything else? We're wrapped up in less than half the time allotted.